Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and this is the second of two shows about personal finance. Now, today, we're focused on what this pandemic will do for the career prospects, the financial plans, and the hopes and dreams of young Americans. Some economists are calling the generation under 30 Generation C for COVID. And consider this, some in this generation are old enough to have been in college during the Great Recession. So they've experienced two significant economic shocks. And recall what Federal Reserve Chief Jerome Powell said recently about how the greatest economic pain is being felt by Americans who make under $40,000. So as our guests join us, your voice is super important here. If you are 35 and under, I'd like to know how your short-term financial life looks. Are you managing to pay your bills? And then talk to me about how your long-term financial dreams look. And this is where I think the conversation really goes today. So are you delaying weddings? Are you delaying buying a house? Are you figuring out how to get that student loan off your back? What are you most concerned about? So I'd love to have some insight on your short-term financial life and how it looks if you're 35 and under. But I think this conversation is really going to focus on what does this mean long-term? What does it do to a decision to have kids, a decision to wait to get married, a decision to decide you really can't afford that house? Things seem too uncertain. What are you most concerned about? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at CarrieNPR. Our guest this hour, Kathy Hauer, is with us, a certified financial planner at Wilson David Investment Advisors, and the author of the 11-Step DIY Comprehensive Financial Plan. There's a lot to talk about there, Kathy, with us from Aiken, South Carolina. Kathy, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Sarah Rathner is with us. She's an expert on credit cards. She's a writer at Nerd Wallet, and she's with us today from Richmond, Virginia. And Sarah, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah, I don't know how old you are. What are you, in your mid-30s or something?
Yeah. Well, I know you're taking calls from callers under 35. I just passed that threshold.
Okay.
36. During the quarantine, so it was a very low-key birthday.
Then you understand this probably more viscerally than I do when I say how unusual it is for a generation that's emerging into adulthood and emerging into, you know, their early years of a career to have sustained two serious financial shocks like this. I'm just curious about what you're hearing from friends and readers and people that are thinking about this.
It's true that this is highly unusual. I was 24 in 2008, so, you know, very early in my career, and I remember the fear that so many people felt. You know, we thought if we did everything right, we were good at, you know, worked hard in school and got a degree, we would find success. And over time, I think our generation has learned to redefine what success means to us. And there are so many different ways to make a wonderful life for yourself. Life doesn't go in a straight line. There are lots of twists and turns along the way. And I mean, not only did we learn that 12 years ago, but we are learning it doubly today. And I really feel for new graduates right now, not just because they're missing out on all the really fun parts of graduating, but because there is so much uncertainty for them, and I remember what that feels like.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to you and Kathy on redefining success. I think that's an interesting idea. But I want to grab a call here from Mitchell in Eugene, Oregon. Hi, Mitchell. Sounds like you're in your late 20s. Is that right?
Hi, yes. Good,
Good to have your call.
So I am a carrier of six-figure debt. I'm 28 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've decided to delay buying a house and I've decided not to have children. But for me, the real struggle has been trying to plan how to plan to take care of the heavy debt burden. So I'm a registered nurse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've even seen what's happened with, you know, the public service loan forgiveness and 99% of those getting denied. And we've seen the Congress people calling for some level of student debt relief in each of these stimulus bills, but tangible relief, you know, still hasn't made the cut. And there's no telling what's going to happen in November with the new administration and their position on, you know, student debt forgiveness. So it's hard to make a plan whether or not to try to aggressively even pay down that debt or wait it out and hope for some relief that may or may not ever come.
I hear you loud and clear on this. Yeah. Mitchell, you wanted to add.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, but the one thing that I think millennials like myself can do and should do, and what I've tried to do over the last year, is to start developing that saving and investing habit since we do have time on our side.
Okay. Hey, some really good points here, and I'm going to put them right to Kathy. Kathy, I think he has put his finger on this. We don't even know how to plan. What does a plan look like when you don't know how to plan? I mean, this is something you think about a lot.
Yes, thanks for calling in, Mitchell, and thanks. I mean, you've probably heard a lot of thanks for being on the front lines as a nurse, and you're doing such a great job for folks today with this coronavirus crisis. I think you really have nailed what's important in trying to establish saving and investing habits, even in the face of having, like you said, six-figure debt. Normally, when someone has credit card debt, we say, the first thing you need to do is pay down that debt, and then you can worry about saving and investing and putting things in your 401k, especially since credit card debt's usually 12 to maybe 22%. But the new situation that we're in with folks like you really necessitates doing exactly what you're doing, figuring out how, even though you've got that debt, how you can contribute to your 401k, how you can do some savings for the future. I love what you're thinking about. And part of me does say, just pay the minimum you can on your student loan as you go along in the hope that a future administration might give you some relief or help you out.
Kathy, a question about what you just said about paying down on the debt, but also, you know, saving for retirement. And Mitchell was clearly thinking about this at 28. Is this a moment we learned that a lot of Americans found themselves suddenly out of work without much of a financial cushion to fall back on? So I wonder if this is a moment to say, I'm really going to build up that emergency fund. And if that means that I only make minimal payments on the student loans or the credit cards or whatever, then that's what it means until I get my financial cushion in order or not. What's your thought on that?
Well, we love the emergency fund. Every financial planner, and Sarah, I'm sure you will corroborate what I'm saying. If there's a way you can save up 3 to 6 months of essential expenses and have it sitting there in an accessible bank account, you are always going to weather any storm better than if you don't.
Sarah, do you think this is a time to, you know, make a few smaller payments to the credit cards so that you can stack up more money in that emergency fund?
That can depend on how stable your financial situation is right now. Obviously, if you're still earning income and things are pretty much normal for you, otherwise you can continue to pay down debts while saving. It's when you lose your job and you lose your source of income that all these rules of thumb kind of fly out the window. And that's when it can be so helpful to have that emergency savings available to you. You know, we at NerdWallet found that 30% of Americans have tapped their emergency fund due to COVID-19.
Wow.
So, you know, but nearly 1 in 5 Americans didn't have an emergency fund to begin with. So if anything, this is a real wake-up call about how important it is to have that money available to you when you need it.
Carl says on Twitter, I graduated last week from my graduate program. I've gone from having a fairly competitive chance of landing a job before the crisis to kind of just looking at a giant pile of student debt and wondering how long it will be until I have to move back home. Another listener here says, I have a 2-year degree from a community college. It's definitely been worth it, but I have friends who are $100,000 in debt from a university who regret it every day. We talked about college costs yesterday, by the way. She says, personally, I would love to return to school for science if I wasn't worried about digging myself into a financial hole. So the phone's here to Brita in Minneapolis. Hey, Brita, thanks for waiting. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Hi. Yeah, it's Brita, actually.
Okay, sorry.
no problem. So I was just calling it because I heard what you were saying, and it fits pretty much everything that I've got going on right now. So I have a partner who we were waiting on a green card visa right now. Mm-hmm. So he actually wasn't working. My work has stopped. We had been planning to have a wedding in June. We had also been planning to move and had a house we were going to buy.
Wow.
So we have had to, basically, we're in the phase now of having no plans and not being able to plan. So all of our plans have kind of gone out the window. And then we were also, living in a house renting and had to move in with family because we were sort of like in a position of, oh, if I, as the single person earning money, am not having an income anymore, then we should probably live somewhere where we don't have to pay rent, which luckily enough, we can do that.
You have that.
With
yeah.
family. But yeah, it's been a wild time here trying to figure out what our next move is going to be and, you know, when things will be in the position where we could even think about buying a house again.
Are you feeling financially shaky, or is your job secure and this is really about waiting until your partner gets the green card and can work?
My job is fairly secure. I work in home renovation. It's just a matter of kind of waiting until my company feels like it's safe enough for us to be, you know, going into people's houses again. So it's kind of a waiting game, but then also waiting for us both to be able to have an income, which now the green cards are on hold. And so it's kind of a lot of
right waiting.
I think financially, we're not necessarily financially insecure because we have, enough like support from family to be able to be living with them and not paying rent. But
yeah, I think you're lucky for that.
Yeah.
You know, Kathy, I did want to note that. Now, we've heard from Brita that she moved back home. We heard from Carl, who says he's worried about that. Have you been noticing some economic trends of, you know, the newly launched adults who are looking to maybe move back in?
Yes. And as Brita says, if you are a person who has a family who can take you in, or you can go, you are in a lucky group. But anecdotally, I have two millennial children. One is still living on his own, but the other lives in Los Angeles. She's furloughed and has an apartment that she's still paying for, but she left Los Angeles and has been with us for 2.5 months.
Wow.
Just because it's in South Carolina, where we are, it's a little bit easier to manage things. And it's been great having her home. Brita, hopefully your family is enjoying having y'all there as much as well. But the fact is, it's not a fair situation when you're a young adult who wants to make it on your own and circumstances have forced you to move home with family and do things, postpone weddings, postpone buying houses. I can say it will eventually get better, but as we alluded to earlier, when you're graduating and coming out during a recession or a crisis like the COVID crisis, it is shown that your economic power is reduced for
right.
at least a decade and sometimes longer.
Yeah, Sarah, I was going to note here that I was looking at some research over the weekend that shows that Americans who came into the job market in 2010 and 2011, what'd you say? You were 24 during the last Great Recession?
Yeah, I was in my mid-20s, yeah.
So this research shows that Americans who came into the job market in 2010 and 2011 had a lower employment rate
through much of their early career years than people who graduated in a good economy. I think we need to note here that this can last for a long time. It's not a, 18-month shock. And I wonder why that is.
I think that just has to do with, how a person builds their career. That's a long time horizon when you're, establishing your network, establishing your experience, working for different companies. When you're spending 18 months searching for a job instead of 18 months at a job, that's when you miss out on these incredible experiences and these network building opportunities. And, I am seeing people who are now in their mid-30s, maybe late 30s, who are still feeling the effects of these things happening very early in their careers.
Wow.
I wish this wouldn't happen again now to a new cohort of young adults. It breaks my heart. But I hope that a lot of creativity and innovation can come out of this experience. Who knows what we'll see out of today's young workers over the next decade.
Mallory says redefining success is a perfect way to put it. We don't aspire to be wealthy because we know it's nearly impossible. We don't have much, but we value what we do have, each other, our cats, and jobs we enjoy. Sarah, that's a phrase you used a few minutes ago, redefining success. What does that mean?
Well, I also enjoy my cats. I just wanted to share that. I thought that was
good
great.
To know.
They make great companions. One of them is about to hop up on my desk right now. But it's really about, I think for a long time we were sort of expecting to have this certain type of lifestyle. And that changed so rapidly. And it's really made a lot of young adults rethink what they value and where they put their money. And, I think we'll see a wave of frugality, a return to budgeting. I know budgeting can be scary. It kind of feels like taking your medicine, but it can also be incredibly empowering to know where every dollar goes. So you know exactly how much you have to spend on the things that you want to do while knowing that you can afford to pay for the things you have to pay for.
Sarah Rathner is with us. She writes for NerdWallet, and Kathy Hauer is with us from Wilson David Investment Advisors in South Carolina. This is the second of two conversations about personal finance, and once I saw some economists calling this generation of 30 and under Generation C, I thought this might be a fruitful conversation to hear how you're managing at 35 years and younger, how you're managing what's going on with career ambitions, how you're juggling, some of the bills, perhaps student loans that you've incurred. And I'm really curious about how you're looking on maybe a longer term horizon here. Have you delayed a wedding? Have you delayed buying a house or basically given up on that? What are you thinking about when it comes to getting those student loans off the balance sheet? How are you juggling all of this? What are you most concerned about? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie NPR to Richard in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Richard, tell me a little bit about yourself, and thanks for waiting.
Hi, no problem. I'm 25. Graduated from University of Wisconsin in 2018,
uh-huh.
Moved to Denver and worked as a geologist for a year.
Excellent.
And I had to move back home in early April.
Because of the pandemic?
Yeah, because of the pandemic.
Did your job...
Now, I was actually... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if your job furloughed or did it end?
I was working in the home building, staff geologist for home building, and construction sites started shutting down.
So how are you thinking about this?
Well, obviously the uncertainty has been difficult for all of us, but I've recently developed a really different attitude, and it's just centered around education. I've started to focus on education. I've started learning how to code, actually. The abundance of online educational resources is just so inspiring. And also, anything you Google is out there. I mean, that includes NerdWallet. It's an awesome resource for me as
for
well.
Sure.
So
for
I've enrolled
sure.
in some monthly subscription services and started to learn online. That's really helped fill my time.
So you are, it sounds like, Richard, you were using this time to gain some financial literacy. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Financial literacy in addition to furthering my education.
Some other education.
In more professional matter. Yeah.
That's really good. So, Kathy, I'm curious about yesterday we heard from a lot of people about how they are assessing the costs of furthering their education, you know, whether it's college tuition, taking a pause, deciding to go to community college. In this DIY comprehensive financial plan that you've worked on, where do education costs fit in, and how should you think about the weight of them in the kind of economy that we're going to be in for a bit?
That's such a great question. And Richard, I love that you're doing coding. I think any kind of education a person decides to get to, you know, that they're going to pay for, that will hopefully move them forward, it's really smart to kind of do a sort of an assessment of what jobs are likely to grow in the future, what jobs pay well as opposed to those jobs that maybe don't pay quite as well. And if you have an interest and a skill in that particular direction, to take the classes, the certifications, the degrees for those particular jobs. It's definitely a changing time period where the kind of jobs that maybe were popular or well-paying years ago maybe aren't today, and other jobs that are new are coming up. So I think it's great that you obviously did some research into what is likely to be a useful job, Richard, in the future, and now you're working toward getting some certifications and qualifications in that area. I think that's really the smartest thing to do.
So, Kathy, I was asking on a larger scale how you measure what a significant investment into education can be. You know, this may be a time when more people decide to go back to school, but how do you put that into the mix with what it costs, with maybe an economy that isn't going to reward that education for a while?
It's hard to do a major investment in education. And an example that I might give is more geared to someone who's graduating from high school. If you're thinking about going to a private, expensive college for a teaching degree, and you're going to end up with $120,000 of college debt, and you're going to have a skill as a teacher where you're probably not going to be paid much more than $40,000, $50,000 a year, it's going to be really difficult for you to pay that back over the lifetime of your career. So that probably wouldn't be a good choice for a career education path. However, if you go to maybe 2 years of community college, and then you finish your last 2 years at a public school, so you keep your tuition really low and you're headed for an engineering degree or a computer science degree where you're likely to maybe start at $77,000 for a salary, that's a much smarter educational investment than the former choice. Not that being a teacher is bad or being being an engineer or a computer science person is good, but if you have an idea of the general salary ranges for the particular career you're choosing, you will probably be able to make a smarter decision in your education choice. And to add one other thing, many of the coding, computer science, medical technician, some of those kinds of jobs are things that only require maybe a two-year degree or some certificates, and those are going to cost you a lot less than a four-year degree. Again, not that that's better or worse, but it's definitely a consideration for what you're going to choose from an educational standpoint overall, because it's expensive to go to school.
Kathy, I thank you very much for the time and the insight this morning. Kathy Hauer is a certified financial planner at Wilson David Investment Advisors and the author of the 11-Step DIY Comprehensive Financial Plan. Here's Rebecca on Twitter who says, I'm 36 and my husband is 35 with three kids. People our age should have learned from the difficulty 12 years ago and prepared for downturns. We have $50,000 in an emergency fund and only a mortgage for debt on a middle-class income. To the phones here to Ari in Minneapolis. Did I pronounce that right, Ari? Ari?
Yeah,
Ari?
Okay. You did.
tell me about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm 35, right on the edge of, you know, the age limit. And I did live through 2008. So I'm kind of with the last Twitter response there. Definitely saved up some money. It's been working as a roofing and siding contractor. So we're still working, fortunately.
That's good.
And I was ready to kind of buy a property, you know, buy a home. And then all this happened. So I'm kind of wondering if, you know, excuse me, to kind of hold off, or is, you know, is this still a good time, you know, based off of what your guests think.
So Ari, is it you were going to flip this house or you were going to live in it?
Oh, I was going to just, actually, you know, open, because I have definitely resources.
Yeah, it sounds like you do. Yeah.
To kind of do either.
Yeah. So, Sarah, I'm curious what you think. I mean, in the last recession, there were people that had money who came in and flipped houses, and they had an impact on housing markets, right? I think we're seeing the effect of that even now. How do you feel about this idea? A, just a time right now to buy a house.
You know, timing a home purchase is a little tough because it's not just an economic decision. It's also an emotional decision. There are so many reasons why you might put down roots in a certain city, or so many reasons why you might seek out to be, you know, seek out becoming a homeowner instead of renting that have nothing to do with your money. You might want more space. You might want to live in a certain area. You might want to have more control over the aesthetics of where you live, which you don't necessarily have as a renter. So it's not so much about the perfect timing when it comes to the real estate market. If you plan on living in a house for a long time, you know, a decade or more, what's happening today might not be much of a consideration for you whenever you are ready to sell in the distant future. If you're planning on flipping a home, that's not something that I have much experience in.
Understood.
You know, that is definitely a place to be cautious, because you're treating a house more as an investment vehicle and not as a place to live. And so that absolutely changes what you should consider.
We're going to get a look at the latest news. When we come back, I would love to hear you on this idea of how an economic shock like this creates a moment to redefine success. This is something Sarah said at the beginning of the conversation, and I've been thinking about it, and I've been seeing some of you reflecting it on Twitter. I mean, if you're 35 and younger, have you had a moment, or have you been thinking about this for a while, where the usual metrics of success just don't apply? And how are you thinking about that differently? Call in 651-227-6000, anywhere in the upper Midwest, 800-242-2828. Reflect on this idea of how this might be a moment, particularly if you're emerging into your career, 35 and younger, to redefine that idea of success. At Kerri, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. Sarah, I have a question about credit cards, since you write about this, before we go back to the phones here. I want to know if you are a new maybe customer of a credit card company, how much leeway you actually have to negotiate deferred payments or a lower interest rate at this moment.
So right now, credit card companies are working with cardholders on an as-needed basis. Basically, if you are somebody who's struggling to afford even the minimum payment on your credit card, call the number on the back of your card and talk to somebody there and explain your situation. It also helps to kind of do a little bit of homework first and look through your budget and figure out what you can afford to pay, so you can come to them with a number and come prepared to negotiate. Right now, these hardship programs are available. They might not be the easiest pills to swallow. They sometimes come with some pretty tough terms because, you know, you might be required to freeze your credit card or close it or accept a lower credit limit, things like that. So it's not magic, but it could help keep things manageable for you for now.
Okay, so I want to be clear. You're saying don't call up and say, what can you do for me? Call up with a specific, could you reduce my interest rate by X? Is that right? That's where you start that discussion?
Yes, and specifically indicate if you've been financially impacted by the coronavirus. And that can potentially open up some additional options for you in terms of what they can do for you right now. And ask for what you want. A lot of these things are negotiations. The worst they can say is, well, we can't do this, but here's what we can do. And you don't have to accept the program they put together for you. You can listen to the terms and decide that it's not right for you.
Okay. Call here from Brian in Barrett, Minnesota. Hi, Brian. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Hi. Thank you so much. This is a wonderful conversation. Thank you, Brian.
I'm glad you're listening.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, I just got laid off recently.
Oh, sorry.
It doesn't look like my line of work is going to be coming back anytime soon because it usually gathers around large gatherings of people. So, speaking of the redefinition of success, I've decided to start my own small business afterwards, which I know is always a crazy venture, but especially in this time.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, is this a common thing? Is it a smart idea? Am I absolutely crazy? You know, it's a one-person business.
So is it a one-person business? Is something you can do yourself?
Yeah, it's pretty much me making things and shipping it out.
What do you think, Sarah? Is this a time to start a small business? I'm seeing numbers about the numbers of businesses, small businesses that are failing, but who knows with a good idea? What do you think?
I think if you have an idea and you put a plan together, then this could be a really great time to start and see where it can take you. A lot of businesses that are more established today came about in the wake of the recession 12 years ago. So who knows? And, you know, if anything, it's helping you build your experience. It's helping you build your network. So when, you know, jobs in your industry begin opening back up again, this could be experience that you could leverage to make yourself an even more viable candidate. So sure, why not keep your options open?
Brian, I'm just curious about what the idea for the business is, as much as you want to tell us.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm a woodworker, just has been a hobby, and I always make little trinkets, so a lot of game boards, and I've actually come into an idea of making bee-friendly birdhouses.
That's cool.
So they have a little bit of a plant. Yeah, so I was thinking, especially with the bee crisis going on, that might be something that
I'd buy one of those, Brian. Yeah, shoot me an email when you get up and going, all right?
Well, can I give a little plug?
I guess, why not?
Oh, sure. Well, it's not up yet, but by the end of the day, Stumping Crossboards on Facebook. I'll have some videos and some pictures up.
All right. I wish you well with it. I like that idea. I hope it goes well. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much.
Sure. Sarah in Elgin, Illinois, we just missed her. She called to say, I got married in January. We moved from Minnesota a couple of years ago, but ended up having a job loss almost immediately. That was a wake-up call. So we started to budget then. Now we have a six-month safety net. Fantastic, Sarah. It's been helpful in this time to know that we have that. And a call here from Kristen in St. Paul. Hi, Kristen. How are things looking in your world these days financially?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last bit. You cut out for 1 second there.
How are things looking financially in your world these days?
Actually, I am probably the most stable I've ever been because I had to take a job in the private sector when my nonprofit job kind of crapped out. And it's not really what I want to be doing, but I'm making more money this way, and I don't feel great about it. So my plans have really changed. I had planned to start my own nonprofit that kind of centers around bringing art to environmental activism. And my plan was to, you know, put music into gatherings of tree planting and something like that.
Wow.
But now that there's no gathering, I couldn't launch that this year as I had planned. So my partner, the musician that I was going to use, is also out of work because there's no music happening right now. So we've both had to take jobs that aren't in what we wanted to do in order to save up money to maybe go at this from a different angle later on.
Well, so the dream of starting a nonprofit has been deferred. For how long do you think?
Well, I mean, maybe a couple years. I had some contacts through networking of where I was at before, that wanted to help kind of incubate this idea and get it going and get this business started. But they've had to start dealing with their own issues because, you know, the nonprofit world isn't doing so great right now, at least in the name of conservation and environmentalism.
Right.
So those contacts just kind of aren't there right now. And I'm not sure if I'll be able to reach out to them later on, or if I'll just have to find my own way to do it.
You know, I'm going to suggest, Sarah, you're probably not an expert on the nonprofit world, but how about this idea of I've got a dream for a nonprofit and matching that up with the financial, the economic marketplace here, especially when you're looking for, I would think, underwriting and donations, right? How does that look?
Yeah, it could be tough for the next couple of years, but like you said, you know, it's a dream deferred. It's not a dream canceled. And I would really keep hope alive, keep your ideas fresh, keep thinking of new ideas that you could build upon for your dream business, because, you know, maybe a couple of years from now, the nonprofit you do launch looks a little bit different from what you would have launched today, but that could be a really beautiful thing. And I think you are right to work in a stable job right now. It's not necessarily what you want to be doing forever, but it is allowing you to build a financial cushion so you can potentially take time out of the paying workforce in some time to build on your nonprofit idea. So you're essentially buying yourself a lot of flexibility by putting in the work today.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. I know that, I mean, we've noted that this is a very difficult time to graduate from undergrad or graduate school. You're eager to, okay, now I've learned this stuff and I've been dreaming out about being a fill in the blank. I mean, how should you think, Sarah, of, and then I may, because of what's going on with the economy, have to work in a job that I don't like very much, but it's stable. How do you think you balance at this point in your career this idea that you're doing something that you didn't dream about doing?
That can be really hard to deal with. You know, you did have a dream, and it, like we said in the last case, it can be a dream deferred. It doesn't have to be forever. And what this job is helping you do right now, even if it's not what you want to do for the rest of your life, is it's allowing you to build up that financial foundation. It's allowing you to begin to pay back student loans and other debts, save for emergencies, and save for longer-term goals like retirement or buying a home one day. So the job is still serving an important purpose in your life. And so look at it that way. It is helping you make it so that you can achieve all of your dreams. And life is hopefully long. And you're going to have a number of different jobs. You're going to have a number of different financial goals over time. They're going to evolve. Something that was important to you a few years ago might not be important to you right now. And something that's important to you right now might not matter in 10 years. And so as long as you're open to new opportunities, you're paying attention to your finances, and you're creating a stable foundation for yourself, you're going to give yourself as much flexibility as possible to achieve whatever dream comes along.
It's good. This is only what you're doing right now. It's not the rest of your life. It's hard to think.
Yes.
It is hard to think about that, you know, when time's passing and you're just like, I really dreamt of being this. But hopefully there's still time to do that. I want to grab a call here from Richard in St. Paul. Richard, it sounds like you heard us talking about redefining success. Is that right?
You bet.
What comes to mind?
Well, I'll tell you. My wife and I are in our 70s.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're the geezer crowd, but we have grandchildren who fit the profile that you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And they're all in the process of establishing careers. There are seven of them, and it's been fascinating to watch that money and material accumulation doesn't occur on any one of them's agenda.
Really?
They're all doing wonderful things. They're Some of them have gone to a college, some have not. A nephew of mine went a few years ago to a technical school and has never stopped working since he came out with an associate degree in electrical wiring or something.
Good field. So Richard,
we have other kids. One is running a nonprofit up in Two Harbors.
Excellent.
One is a fledgling documentary filmmaker.
Tough field, but it's good, but rewarding. So, Richard, I think I hear you saying that what might have motivated you and your wife when you were at this, you know, early career years, you see a pretty marked difference between what motivates your grandkids.
Actually, no. I think we've contaminated them.
Okay.
Our goals and ambitions, you know, are certainly strongly environmental and strongly egalitarian and certainly left of center and all of that. And I'm sure that's had an impact on the grandkids because we've had a very close relationship with them. Some of them have even lived with us for periods of time.
Wow. That's good to hear.
But I find them and among their peers, you know, this whole change in mindset as to what constitutes success. And what constitutes success to them is occurring to me to be something a lot less tangible.
Oh, that's I think that's for the good, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, me too. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm their biggest fan.
Good to have your call, Richard. Glad you joined the discussion. You know, Sarah, I want to ask you about financial literacy. This came up yesterday a number of times when we were talking about how to value what you're going to spend on college. And I know this is something that Nerd Wallet is committed to. Tell me what you find that is most maybe misunderstood about finances among the people that are accessing Nerd Wallet and the people that you're talking to.
I think Nerd Wallet readers and our audience, they're really looking to learn. And they're really... they come to NerdWallet because they're faced with an important financial decision. And basically, they just want to make sure they're not making the wrong choice. They're seeking out information. They're seeking out absent validation in some cases. And we have lots of great tools and calculators, and that can really help you map out a couple of different scenarios for yourself. And that can help you make an informed and confident choice. Because making financial choices can be pretty scary.
I agree.
If you have somebody in your corner who's saying, yes, you can do this, and here's how, and here's some number, you know, here are numbers behind this, and here's some accurate information about how this works, that can be really empowering.
You know, something that came up yesterday that was kind of a realization for me, one of our guests said, investing in a college education can be the biggest financial commitment that you'll make. Sometimes it's even more than buying a house. And so many people come into this moment to launch their career with all this weight hanging around their shoulders, this weight of student loan debt. And it really crimps their ambition and their ability to do some of the stuff that they'd want to do. I'd say that's, you know, starting that financial literacy in the moment that you start to think about what you're going to spend in college and what that's going to mean after college seems to be a pretty important moment. What do you think?
Oh, it's a pivotal moment, in everyone's lives. It's hard when you're 17 or 18 years old to really understand what it means to have a $1,500 a month student loan payment for 15 years or something. It doesn't seem real because you're still living at home and you're still, you're not working yet necessarily. And you're not necessarily supporting yourself yet, at least not completely. But once you enter your adult years and you have financial obligations in addition to your student loan payments, it can be really hard to hit certain markers of adulthood that you might have thought you would have hit by certain ages, like getting married or buying a house. And so it is a really important decision that no one should make in haste.
What you just said about what's it going to be like to spend $1,500, you know, to mail this off every month after I've graduated. You're right. That is really hard to conceptualize. A quick call here from Cole in Minneapolis. Hi, Cole. What are you curious about?
Good morning. So I am curious about any historical reference, maybe from 2009 or other downturns, in terms of folks pivoting from one sector into another with their job skills. For example, a lot of educators like myself are really fluent in, you know, doing online lessons now or facilitating discussions or basically trainings. And I'm curious about in the past what it's been like when folks such as ourselves pivot to, you know, offering our services in the private sector or other kind of openings that might come out with the skill sets we already have, especially as you said, young people with tens of thousands of dollars of debt that we need to keep paying off in a new way.
Intriguing question. Sarah, you have some thoughts on that?
Desperation and it can breed innovation, really. It can make you creative. It can make you rethink, how can I apply my skills in this new world? And it's especially palpable when so many of your peers are going through this with you. It's not just you. You're not alone. It's really a generational thing. And so we saw a lot of change come out of 2009. I think we're going to see more changes and more industries come out of this time as well, ones that we don't necessarily know exist yet, but it will happen. And I think it's really helpful when young workers really think about, you know, I have a degree in this particular subject, but what else can I do with that? Because that can serve you throughout your career and provide all sorts of opportunities for you. You're going to be working for 30 or 40 years. That's a long time. You're not going to stay in the same type of job forever. And that's okay.
Sarah, really good to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Sarah Rathner is an author. She's a credit cards expert at NerdWallet and joining us from Richmond, Virginia.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.